It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it. They do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set. He's back to throw. Finds the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes. Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance.
Oh, here we go. Big Blue Kickoff Live presented by Andrew Mark right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Also on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. John Schmelk with Lance Meadow. A very chippy Lance Meadow this morning. I don't know why he's so cranky. Maybe in a bad night. We'll get into that. And we'll talk everything NFL and New York Giants football, of course. The Giants coming off that big comeback win against the Tampa Bay Bucks, a very big win for them and a good one as well. The Giants obviously winning that game in comeback fashion, putting a 40 spot on the board. Martellus Bennett, Akeem Nix, Victor Cruz, Andre Brown. That's the good stuff. The bad news, big plays, offensive line, injuries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Lance, good morning.
How are we doing, John? And I'm a little bit chippy, but I'm okay.
I had a decent evening. You're angry.
Don't speculate here. Everything was fine last night. No issues. We're not carrying anything.
Are you sure?
I'm perfectly fine. I'm ready to rock and roll. And we should note that later on in the program at 10 o'clock, we'll be joined by Jonathan Jones of the Charlotte Observer. He'll help us preview the Panthers, give his perspective on that team as it's a quick turnaround for Big Blue this week. They'll be heading to Carolina on Thursday night.
And Coach Coughlin saying in his conference call yesterday that just giving some injury news to lead off the show. David Deal has something with the MCL. They're awaiting further test on that to see exactly how bad it's going to be. No word still yet on Ahmad Bradshaw. And obviously Dominic Hickson has that concussion. So odds are, weirder things have happened, but usually concussions don't clear up after just one or two days. So if Dominic plays on Thursday, I'd be extremely surprised.
So would I.
You know, he'll be fine next week, most likely, depending on the severity of the concussion. Obviously, the Giants and the NFL monitor that very carefully over the course of the week. But if he plays Thursday, I'd be surprised. Lance, that means everyone's going to get to see Ramses Barden get some more action. Can't teach height.
He can't. The T-shirts are being printed up. They'll be hitting stores next week. Our good friend Devin, already hard at work on that project. And also, it could present an opportunity for Reuben Randall, perhaps to expand his role. He's been involved in special teams. If Dominic Hickson can't go, perhaps you'll see a little bit more of him in rotation with Ramses Barden. The other bright spot, I think, to come out of not just the other game on Sunday, but the previous game against the Cowboys, was the play of Martellus Bennett. He's been relatively consistent for the Giants. He's become a red zone threat. And if one of your three receivers is down, at least Eli Manning knows Martellus Bennett can pretty much be compared to a receiver at this point.
Whoa, hold on. Let's not compare him to a receiver.
But consistently
yet.
For two games, I know it's a small sample size, but he has come through as a reliable target. He has had a drop or two, but Eli Manning has looked to him. There's a confidence there. There's trust there that has slowly developed.
And I wonder if we're going to start seeing a little bit of Reuben Randall, too, the second-round pick, who clearly hasn't done enough to get his way onto the field quite yet. Still trying to get, you know, the playbook squared away, get used to that Kevin Gilbride offense. Maybe we'll see him for a few plays when the Giants go to four wide receiver sets on Thursday night against the Panthers. But they also, I think, Lance, have to fix some problems. We talked about a lot of this yesterday, mostly because the callers brought it up. And against a guy like Cam Newton with a dynamic playmaker like Steve Smith, you got to make sure these Panther players don't get behind you. The way Cam Newton can escape pressure, get outside, buy time, and you know Brandon LaFell's had a very good year to start the season here. And with Steve Smith, they can beat you down the field. And the Giants secondary better be careful because Cam Newton's a much better quarterback than Josh Freeman.
It only took him about 10 seasons, but they finally found Mohsin Mohamed's replacement, the Carolina Panthers.
They really did.
I mean, think about it. Ever since Mohsin Mohamed left, who has been able to compliment Steve Smith to draw some attention away from him? I mean, they haven't really had a good, reliable tight end. I think Greg Olsen can develop into that. based on the offense that they have now implemented, but Olsen was relatively quiet in the last game. Brandon LaFell, if he could continue to make catches, get separations with the defensive backs, this is a guy that I think could really help Steve Smith in the long run. And not only is Steve Smith deadly in terms of his speed, but he's a tough receiver. He's willing to take a hit, and he can also get a lot of yardage after the catch. So, as you just alluded to, John, the Giants secondary needs to keep close tabs on Steve Smith. Cam Newton has the versatility. He has the mobility. If you let him escape the pocket, he is going to run on you. He had a career-high 71 yards against the Saints. Now, you have to put things in perspective. This is the Saints' defense. They have struggled immensely dating back to last season. But the Giants have a track record of struggling somewhat against mobile quarterbacks. Michael Vick, who they play twice a year, has had some decent success against the Giants. So that's good preparation that they can turn to. But Cam Newton's a completely different beast because he can run, he can throw off the run, and certainly he can create for his receivers down the field.
And he's 270. Michael Vick's a small guy. So is Robert Griffin III, for that matter. And that's who, you know, he really reminds me of just because of their statures. But, you know, Cam Newton, 6'5", 240. You know, this guy's basically a linebacker playing quarterback. He's like Dante Culpepper used to be. This guy's a monster. And, you know, you're not going to be able to probably knock him out of the game. He's bigger than most of the Giant linebackers are. So, and the Panthers, with that aerial attack, that's what people talk about, Lance. But you also can't discount the job they do on the ground. They have three running backs now that they'll use in different situations: D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart, and Mike Tolbert, the hybrid running back
and
fullback.
Newton's a fourth.
And, of course, Newton really is a fourth guy. You're right. And they used Tolbert in short yardage last week. He had one fumble but one touchdown in that game. D'Angelo Williams is kind of their speed big play guy. Jonathan Stewart, kind of a change of pace, does a little bit of everything. So they will run the ball as well. And the Giants did a good job against Doug Martin, not so good against DeMarco Murray in week number one. The Panthers are going to try to run the ball here. The Giants have to contain it.
And remember, the Giants only saw Doug Martin. We didn't really see LeGarrette Blount at all. When you face the Panthers, as you just touched on, you're going to see not one, not two, but three different style running backs. That is hard to adjust right off the bat. And Carolina does a nice job mixing and matching, and that gives the defense different looks, and it also helps wear down the pass rush. And if you're Carolina, I think that they're probably going to look to milk the clock, wear down that Giants defense, keep them on the field for long, sustainable drives, and then when the opportunity presents itself, all of a sudden Cam Newton will look to catch the Giants secondary off guard and maybe go for the home run. Carolina is balanced. They're not a one-dimensional team like perhaps they were in seasons prior, where they leaned primarily on the run and Steve Smith was there to just maybe help move the chains. They can kill you in both directions, and it's going to be important for the Giants, and I know we've been throwing this down your throats each and every week. They got to stop the run because Carolina relies so heavily on that three-headed monster, and they've spread the wealth. I mean, last week, you look at the numbers against the Saints, John. D'Angelo Williams, 14 carries. Stewart, 11. Newton ran it for 13 times, and Tolbert only had two carries, but they bring him in when they need those short yardage situations. So it's going to be a big test for the Giants' front seven. They're not just going to see one style running back. They're going to see multiple different dimensions.
And I want to get into the Panthers' defense here in just a bit, but first let's go to our calls, 201-939-4513. Our buddy Jay in Irvington. What's up, Jay?
Jay, you there? All right, Jay, apparently. Yeah.
Hey, there
right,
he
Jay,
is.
What
what's up, Jay?
Hey, what's going on, man? I just wanted to know what we're going to do with our secondary this week. Are they going to start playing physical? What's going on with Andre Brown? Will he start this week? And about our offensive line, what's going on with David Dill? Like, how are we going to line it up this week with Dill out?
Yeah, like I said, I don't think Dill's going to play this week. And, Jay, you just referenced that, too. Will Beattie will be on the left side. Locklear will be on the right. As to whether Andre Brown's going to start, I think it's a wait-and-see proposition here to see whether or not Amal Bradshaw is ready to go with that neck injury. We'll hear word on that today. Coach Coughlin will address the media after practice. I believe that's going to be around, like, 140 or so, 130, 120, something like that. But go to Giants.com, all that information for you as soon as it becomes available. And finally, the secondary you mentioned, let's see if Prince plays this week. I'm thinking the Giants might have held him back last week on purpose so he didn't have that quick turnaround from Sunday to Thursday.
Makes sense.
My guess is that Prince will play this week. So you put him out there with Coe, Hosley, Webster. You have some guys there. And I guess he'll play a little bit more physical. I mean, these refs are letting the secondaries play, generally speaking, in the NFL this year, so we'll see what happens.
Corey Webster was asked about that because the reporters who had conversed with him throughout the course of the week after the game were pressing him on, you know, other receivers, other corners are getting away with murder at times in terms of the pushing and the shoving. And they were asking Corey, do you adjust? Do you see what you can get away with? And I thought his answer was interesting because he said, if you try to bend the rules and break the rules, you're going to get into a bad habit. And then when the real officials come back, who may be calling the game a bit closer, then all of a sudden they're going to start calling it left or right. So he said, I still play by the rules. I do what we practice and preach during the course of practice and the off season, because if you change things up overnight, it's hard to shed those habits. And then the officials are really going to keep close tabs on you and penalize you back to back. So Corey Webster, I thought, at least has the right perspective in how he's approaching the season. But it goes without saying, every game, you challenge them for those first 5 yards. You're entitled to that. After the first 5 yards, you let go, but you still got to stay with your man-to-man assignments.
Of course. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Brian is in New York. What's up, Brian? How are you, pal?
Hey, John. Hey, Lance. I'd like to touch on the big game Andre Brown had for us the other day. It makes me think of Earth, Wind, and Fire, basically, with Bradshaw and Jacobs and Derek Ward.
Right.
If we can just trust David Wilson a bit more, maybe we can get our running game going and stuff like that.
Yeah,
what do you think?
Yeah, you know what? The Giants do need to get the running game going, and you saw it in that third quarter drive. Once Andre Brown got going, it opened up the passing game even a little bit more than what they had previously. And I do think, Lance, that we talked about this yesterday a little bit, that he provides more of a lower your pad, straight ahead power rusher. And while Amai Bradshaw does have power and he can run over guys, we've seen it a million times before, he's more of a dancer in the backfield. Brown will just lower his shoulders, make that one cut to the hole and go. And I think that did set a nice tone in the second half for the Giants.
Yeah, it helped them, you know, be a little bit more balanced, and that enabled Eli Manning to take his fair chances down the field. Andre Brown took advantage of his opportunity. I don't think you could really ask for anything else from a running back that was in his position. He's been bounced around from team to team. He's been hurt. He's been through the waiver wire. And he talked about that after the game, how it was, you know, finally an opportunity for him to make a statement and perhaps carve a larger role out. And the bottom line is, if Amon Bradshaw doesn't play, if they feel that they want to give him a little bit more than a week rest till they get prepared for their next game, Andre Brown's going to take the bulk of the carries. I don't think they're at the point where they're willing to give David Wilson more touches. He would be the change of pace guy, and they also want to preserve him for special teams. Now, you look at what Carolina gave up to New Orleans. The Saints put up over 160 yards on the ground. So Carolina is not that stingy in terms of stopping the run. This should be a game in which they should look to set the tempo at the line of scrimmage.
And Doug Martin nearly 100 yards in week one when Carolina played Tampa Bay. The Giants should be able to do some damage on the ground. And you mentioned the Panther defense here. They actually ranked just behind the Giants in terms of yards per game, allowing about 372. That's about 20th, 21st in the league. Last year, they were one of the worst defensive teams in all of football, with the fifth worst defense in terms of yards allowed per game. This year, like you mentioned, Lance, they're 14th as we stand, 13th rather, against the pass. Let's see. Allowing around 225 or so yards per game. And then if you take a look at their rushing defense very quickly, you mentioned the struggles they had last week. They come in at 28th in the league, allowing 4.7 yards a carry, 145 rushing yards a game. And you're right, that's something the Giants are going to have to take advantage of here. And it makes Eli Manning's job so much easier. If you can run some play action, get into third and medium, third and short, or second and two, you can, you know, do some play action, try to make some big plays down the field because you're in second and short. So these are all things the Giants should be able to take advantage of against the Panthers, a dangerous team, but a team that certainly does have its flaws.
And you win the time of possession battle when you run the ball effectively. And I think that that's what the Giants always strive for, keep the opposition off the field and wear down the defense. And you did touch on the defense in terms of how the Giants maybe could fare in the passing game, although they always look to balance out their offense. The Panthers throw out a rookie corner on the right side in terms of their second slot in Josh Norman. So it's going to be interesting if the Giants will test him early. You know, normally when you go up against a rookie, you see maybe how he could match up. He is 6 feet tall, so he does have some size, he does have some power, and he's done a nice job over the first two games, but you have to wonder, how would he match up with a guy like Hakeem Nicks or Victor Cruz, depending if they move him around. On the opposite side, they have Gamble, who's clearly the veteran of the group. But this kid in Norman, they're throwing out there. He won the opportunity at camp, and they expect him to help balance out the two slots that they throw out there with respect to the corners. If I'm the Giants, I want to test the rookie early, just as other teams are probably going to test Prince Amukamara right when he gets an opportunity.
Charles Godfrey, their strong safety, had an interception return for a touchdown last week against the Saints, a 9-yard return. 201-939-4513. Tim is in Jackson, New Jersey. What's going on, Tim? How are you?
Fine.
What's on your mind, bud?
Will Prince Amukamara be ready for Thursday night game against the Panthers?
I think so, Tim. I think so. Thanks a lot for the call. Sorry for cutting you off there. Yes, I believe he's going to be ready because they purposely held him out of Sunday's game. So he would be ready for a pretty dynamic passing attack in the Panthers.
And it's going to add to the depth, as you touched on earlier. You know, if you don't have to rely on Coe and Tryon starting, if somebody aggravates an injury, you can turn to them. Though I've been really impressed with the play of Michael Coe. The unfortunate part of Coe's game, at least at this point, is he's been troubled by that hamstring injury, and that is why you saw a lot of Tryon on Sunday's game. They would have thrown out Coe more if he was fully healthy,
right?
But they were concerned that he was going to aggravate the injury. They kept him pretty much to the nickel package. If he gains back his full strength, even if Prince is not ready, the game plan, which I think the Giants would be okay and comfortable with, is throwing out Coe on one side and throwing Webster out on the other, and they could likely get through a game with that personnel.
Coe was beat deep on that one play by Vincent Jackson. Of course, that's a pretty large group. Vincent Jackson beats a lot of corners deep, so Giant fans shouldn't get too upset about that. I agree. Michael Coe has been pretty darn solid. 201-939-4513. Hey, Len's in Maryland. What's up, Len?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good morning.
Hey, Len.
Good, good. Geez, not much time to transition to another game.
No, sir. No,
you gotta turn it around pretty quickly. Just a couple of things. I'm not an offensive line expert, but I thought they played pretty well the other night. All you got to do is look at the numbers. 51 pass attempts and no sacks, and 600 yards total yardage. So I think we got a pretty good game out of the offensive line. I hope that continues as the season progresses. I think we're probably going to see a little more Reuben Randall simply by the numbers. I mean, we got an injury there, and I think Reuben's going to step in, and I believe he'll do some things. I really like this guy. I mean, I think, long term, I think the sooner the better we can get him on the field. I think long term he's just going to be a terrific receiver. For me, the key to the game, like any Giants-Carolina game, you got to stop the run. They're just going to try to run the ball, and over the years, you guys know as well as I do, even in playoff games, boy, they really have shredded us with the running game.
Yep.
So we're just going to have to, play tough up front, and, linebackers are going to have to make some plays, and we can't get Newton into second and three, second and two. You know, we got to keep it, 7 and 8, and I think we got a really good chance of winning this game. But I think it all starts with stopping their running game. Hey, it's always good to talk to you guys, and let's go Giants.
All right, thanks, Len. And look, Len's probably thinking back to that Panther game to close out the regular season.
To close out
the
stadium. A few
years ago, to close out the stadium, exactly. And Stewart and D'Angelo Williams combined for almost 300 yards rushing in that game, 250, I think, something like that.
They ran wild.
It was bad. So, different team, though. Cam Newton wasn't a quarterback for that Panthers team either. But strangely enough, the Panthers and Giants do have a certain amount of history over the course of the years here. So it'll be interesting. I'm sure most of the players on both teams weren't there for most of those games. But, you know, from a fan's perspective, there is a certain amount of history between the two clubs. And Len's right. Historically speaking, the Panthers have killed the Giants with the run.
And I don't see them changing that script. I think they're going to go run heavy. Cam Newton, the fact that now he's in the mix and he's running the offense, you know, he looks to run first more so than pass. And with those four guys in the backfield, they're going to give the Giants a heavy dose of the run, and it's up to the Giants to contain them, keep him in the pocket. You don't want Cam Newton to run out on the edge, because then that gives him the ability to really make plays off of his legs. If they can do that, you know, you take pressure off the secondary, and as Len just touched on, you force perhaps the Panthers into situations on third and long where they're not going to be able to run. They're not going to be able to use the draw play. They're going to have to throw. And if you're the Giants, you want Cam Newton to try to air things out, because I think the Giants would have a lot more confidence being in that position. Despite some of the ups and downs from the secondary play, it's still a better position to be in. Force Cam Newton to win the game with his arm rather than his legs. If he gets in short yardage situations, could be a very long night for the Giants.
201-939-4513, also on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. And this one coming in from J.L. Leahy, and he makes a good point listing his keys to the game. And he lists the pass rush, something, Lance, we haven't really talked about thus far. And the pass rush has been poor. People kill the secondary, so the big plays. And is that a part of it? Sure, it's a part of it. You can't let guys get behind you. But when you get absolutely no pressure on the quarterback with your front four, eventually someone's going to get behind your secondary. And the Giants' pass rush, especially those three defensive ends, have got to do a better job.
But if Carolina runs the ball a lot, that helps counter the pass rush.
Sure.
Because if you take your chances and you over-pursue, all of a sudden now your second layer of defense is stranded, which is your linebacker core, and D'Angelo Williams sometimes can outrun a linebacker one-on-one.
And against Cam Newton, it's important to be very disciplined with your pass rush as well. If you look back at the way the Giants played the Cowboys and they left their rush lanes, Tony Romo was able to create a lot of extra time and make those plays down the field. Cam Newton even more elusive than Romo. So that's another thing they have to do. You have to pressure the quarterback, but you also have to contain and be disciplined.
And this also relates to the pass rush here on Twitter. Cindy Faye Hamilton at Cindy underscore Faye, who is an avid listener to our postgame show here on Giants.com, brings up the point, or at least the question, is there a lot of holding not being called, and that in turn is affecting the Giants' pass rush? It's certainly a contributing factor. The officials have had quite an impact on the NFL over the last couple of weeks. I think if you watch Monday night's game between the Broncos and the Falcons,
now, I completely understand
what I'm talking about.
I was
about.
In and out of that game. As I understand it, they overturned a call properly towards the end of the game.
Correct.
What were some of the really bad calls that went on last night? And callers, I know we have three people on the line, and we're going to get you in just 1 second standby. I just want to hear what happened last night with the refs, because I did not have a chance to watch the game.
Well, first of all, the first quarter lasted almost an hour alone. It's not so much
I don't care about
calls.
That, though. Whatever.
No, but it does, because that affects the rhythm of the game. That's the issue that I have.
So a lot of conferences?
A lot of conferences, indecisive, also throwing flags, picking them up, letting them also play a little bit loosely, and then all of a sudden calling a tight game. I mean, there was one call
they
where
were inconsistent.
The ball was deflected on a throw by Matt Ryan. They called then defensive pass interference. Now, it was reviewed and overturned, but the official
wasn't
was
sure
right
that was
in the front.
Reviewable
it is
call.
Re-
I
yeah,
guess
it's
it
reviewable.
Is. Okay.
And to me, based on the official's vantage point, he should have seen that clearly the ball was deflected based on the
but
angle.
They got
that
it right, though.
They did get it right, but once again, a lot of questioning the individual calls by the officials, a lot of conferences, and that kills the rhythm of a football game. And that hurts how a team executes on both sides of the football. So that, to me, is the biggest effect that I see from the officials.
201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. By the way, Peyton Manning and Eli having very similar games this week, both at three picks in the first half. Eli was able to bring the Giants back, but obviously Denver, I think, a bit of a better team than Tampa Bay, so Denver not able to have that, better than Tampa Bay, so Denver not able to have that same success.
And the Broncos nearly orchestrated a comeback there. Yeah. It was a six-point game late, but Manning just had a rough first quarter. He didn't also throw for 510 yards. That was
That's also
tough
a good
for him
point.
To pull off.
201-939-4513. Alex in Connecticut. Alex, what's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. How are you?
What's up?
Good. I was at the game on Sunday, and
nice.
I can't tell you, I have never been more fired up for a game. When Kenny Phillips made that hit over the middle, I mean, that fired the crowd up like you couldn't believe. I mean, that was just... So I'm still just, you know, riding high off that win. And I think, you know, we're going to get a win Thursday in Carolina. I think as long as the front four, you know, JPP and OC and Tuck, they got to, you know, come through. And if they can get pressure, I think we have a good shot of winning. And also, I think a big X factor in this game is Brandon LaFell. He's been targeted, I'm not sure how many times, but I know he has 9 receptions for 155 yards. And I think, you know, we'll probably double Steve Smith. But if we can contain this guy in LaFell, I think he's really coming on. And, you know, as long as we can shut him down, I think we have a great shot at winning.
Yeah, look, you're right. LaFell has become their possession receiver to balance out the big plays of Steve Smith. He really has.
As I mentioned earlier, you know, since Musa Muhammad left, Carolina really hasn't had another reliable receiver, and LaFell through two games has been consistent. Cam Newton has built some chemistry with him. It's also important to note regarding the Giants' pass rush, Carolina's right tackle, Byron Bell, nursing an ankle injury, so he's a question mark as to whether he can play.
The center, Ryan Khalil, I believe, is questionable for the game.
So perhaps that could create some opportunities for the Giants if they have to turn to some of their backups on the O-line.
201-939-4513. Thanks, Alex. Back to the calls. Mark is in East Orange. What's up, Mark?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good morning.
Hey, I was definitely at that game Sunday. It was crazy, but only thing I have to say is what's going on with the cornerbacks, you know? Like, I know Webster, he having his up and down. And, you know, I like Prince and I like Hosley. But, you know, Justin Tyron, I'm not really digging him because lately every time he's been put in the game, he's been messing the Giants up on crunch time. And, you know, what's going on with the cornerbacks?
Well, they're trying to get back to full health at this point, and the expectations are that if Prince can maybe get a practice under his belt today and is well-rested, they'll throw him out there, and the goal is to have Webster and Prince Amukamara play a good portion of the snaps. You bring Coe and Hosley in off the bench, depending on your nickel or dime packages, and, you know, Tryon's been out there mainly because of injuries, and he's been with his receivers every step of the way. The problem is he's been out-jumped.
He doesn't play the ball well at all.
Miles Austin out-jumped him. Vincent Jackson, Mike Williams, you know, you name it. That shows a lack of aggressiveness or a lack of awareness at times, and Tom Coughlin touched on this after the games. That's the biggest adjustment that Tryon needs to make. He's got the speed. He doesn't necessarily have the height, but that doesn't mean that he can't be an aggressive corner. He needs to make up for that in some capacity, and the way you do that is you push, you shove, you run with your guy, and you make it very difficult for him to haul in that ball.
And I don't want to put all the blame on the Giants' cornerbacks either. Their safeties have not played particularly well. A lot of these plays, these corners are supposed to have safety up over the top, and they're late coming over, whether it's because of bad angles, not reading the play properly. So those are two things that you got to keep an eye on, you know, when you just blame the cornerbacks for everything. Sometimes they're supposed to have safety help, and they don't. Don't get me wrong. There have been some plays where they haven't played well. Corey Webster was torched in the first week against Dallas. Did not play well. You know, it happens.
He lost his man-on-man assignments.
More often than not, or at least many times, you know, the corner is supposed to have some help back there, and they were not getting good help in the last couple of games. 201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Liam's in Randolph. What's up, Liam?
Hi, guys.
What's up, Liam?
I just have one question.
Sure.
How can you prepare for such a dynamic Panthers offense in just a couple of days? I mean, I don't know how you do it. How do the Giants do it, and how do they be successful like that?
Well, you know, Liam, it's funny. I asked Chris Snee that in the locker room right after the game on Sunday, and he looks at me, he goes, I don't know. And he kind of shrugged his shoulders. I want to get the ice off of me, and I'll see how we do it. But, look, it's not going to be easy. So it's going to be tough to game plan. They'll have their carded practices where they really, you know, don't practice a lot of their own stuff, I bet, and they'll do mostly focus on Carolina to get ready for them. But I think you'll probably just do a lot of fundamental stuff that you know works. You focus on simple things like staying in your rushing lanes, getting contained on Cam Newton, knowing your assignments. And you're right, you're not going to have as much time to focus. Yesterday was a Monday, a day that a lot of times after victories, Coach Coughlin gives the players off. But yesterday they were here past dinner. They were here at 8 o'clock at night when I left here. So these guys are here late. They're watching tape. They'll be here. They're here today early. They're here at 7:30 doing their stuff in meetings, watching film. So people work a little bit longer. They'll work a little bit harder. But it is a tough deal, Lance, to try to get ready in just a couple of days.
A game like this, you start to see the importance of why the coaching staff uses the offseason to scout all of their upcoming opponents.
You're right.
This is where you're going to start to see the benefits of that, where you don't have a full week of preparation. You need to get your guys rested, and you need to implement a new game plan. That is why they looked over all the film of the Panthers last season. I'm sure clearly they're looking closely over the first two games, and this coaching staff went right to work after Sunday's game. I mean, they started evaluating the Panthers on tape and looking in terms of how they want to counter this attack because it's now a completely different style of offense that they're going to see. You know, Cam Newton, more mobile than Josh Freeman. They've got different style running backs, and they have, you know, a whole new receiving corps. So it is. It's a huge challenge. I mean, the benefit is every team's had to go up against this schedule. Yep. Everyone's going to be in the Thursday mix now that they have used that for all 16 weeks as opposed to they had implemented that after the Thanksgiving game. And the Panthers are in the same boat. They played Sunday. They had a grueling game against the Saints. It's not as if they're coming off a week off. Everybody's on an even playing field at this point. Panthers need to prepare for a dynamic offense attack in the Giants.
Everyone's in the same boat. That's the bottom line. So both teams had the same amount of preparation time. It's funny, though. And I remember teams used to say, oh, we lobbied for it. It's unfair that the Lions and Cowboys, you know, get to play that Thursday and Thanksgiving. They get all that extra time off after the game. But then there's the flip side where you don't have time to prepare for that Thanksgiving game. So I think teams are kind of seeing both sides of that coin. It's going to be great for the Giants next week when they have 10 days to prepare for their next game, but this week's tough because you only have three or four. So that's kind of how it goes. It goes both ways. 201-939-4513. Back to our phones. Kendall's in New Jersey. What's up, Kendall?
201-939-4513.
Kendall, are you there? Kendall, you got to turn down your computer. We're getting some background noise here.
Yeah, Kendall, do me a favor. Turn your computer volume down, listen through your phone, and let's give it one more shot. Kendall, go ahead, pal.
Okay, Kendall, a man of very few words. Kendall, if you have an opportunity to work out the technological kinks, feel free to give us a call back here, 201-939-4513. You could also chime in on Twitter, hashtag GiantsChat, as the Giants and Panthers going head-to-head on Thursday night.
By the way, Lance, before we get to our guest here, and we'll get to him in just 1 second, I'm watching on NFL Game Rewind, which, by the way, it's fantastic. I'm watching part of the first half of the Colts-Vikings game. Andrew Luck can play.
Multi-talented,
very,
by the way.
Very impressive. And a lot more mobile than people give him credit for. He got outside, avoided the rush well, and I'm not calling him Peyton Manning, but he kind of, the way he sits in the pocket and looks around the field, you kind of get that feeling. And Andrew Luck can play. Very impressive what I'm seeing here.
Well, he had a rough game against the Bears in terms of turnovers, but he did bounce back.
He's a rookie, though. All rookies are going
to have, you're going to have your fair up and downs. But I was going to say you were multidimensional, the fact that you're able to host a show and watch a replay of a game at once.
Well, Lance, kudos when I get to host with someone like you who fills so much time with his bloviating, I'm able to watch a game and host a show at the same time.
All right, can we move on?
Yes, we can.
Now that we've blown smoke back and forth here. Well, as I mentioned, Giants getting ready for the Carolina Panthers on Thursday night. We're now joined by Jonathan Jones, the Panthers beat writer from the Charlotte Observer. Jonathan, appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's good, fellas. I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, thanks for coming on, Jonathan. We appreciate it. And I guess we'll get right to it. Tough for both teams trying to get guys healthy with only a 3-4 day time frame between week two and week three. How are the Panthers looking health-wise early this Tuesday morning?
Yesterday, obviously I haven't seen them yet today, but yesterday, things were looking good. You know, they escaped week one without any, serious injuries, and it seems that, that they're going to do the same with week two. You know, they have a backup offensive lineman with a shoulder stinger. They have a couple guys. There was a bug going around the defensive lineman, meeting room, it seemed. There were about three or four linemen who were stricken with the same stomach bug. But outside of that, everything looks good. Steve Smith is still trying to rehab that right knee. It got dinged against Tampa Bay in the first week, and then you saw him go down on Sunday with it after a pass in the end zone. And so he's going to be taking it easy this week, I'm sure. An 11-year veteran doesn't need to go too hard in a short week. But outside of that, health-wise, the Panthers seem to be doing pretty well.
Talking with Jonathan Jones of the Charlotte Observer. Jonathan, you just touched on Steve Smith. I know he's trying to overcome that knee injury, and he's one of their top threats in the passing game. And since Mohsin Mohamed left, and we had talked about this earlier on in the show, it's been very hard for Caroline to develop a number two option in the passing game. But over the first two games, it seems Brandon LaFell has taken that role on. Does the team look at him as a reliable option moving forward that he can help take attention away from Steve Smith?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing with LaFell is this is his third year. This is when they hoped that they would see that progression. Obviously, if it happened in the first or second year, if you were a Julio Jones type of guy, then that would be great. But, you know, Julio Jones is not the kind of wide receiver that every NFL team can be blessed with. And so you have to hope for a wide receiver that in his third year really gets it. And that's what you're seeing with LaFell. Not only is he getting it on the routes, you see him out there on the edges and he knows where the sidelines are. But you're also seeing it in the downfield blocking, which is so important, so critical to the zone read that Carolina runs. And so LaFell, he gets it in several different facets. of their offensive game plan. So he's finally coming along, and he is certainly a reliable number two wide receiver to complement Steve Smith.
And you mentioned the running game. I think the Carolina Panthers, besides maybe the Patriots, the most frustrating team for fantasy football owners, okay, considering you guys have so many different running backs. But it seems like they've really carved out a little niche for Mike Tolbert, and then they, you know, switch back and forth between D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart. How is that mix and that three-headed monster at running back working so far this year?
Well, it didn't work out too well against Tampa Bay, obviously, right, with D'Angelo Williams negative one, and the team with 10 rushing yards was tied a franchise low. But obviously last week you saw what that three-headed monster, and four-headed if you include Cam Newton, who was in fact the leading rusher on the team on Sunday, four-headed monster when you include him. And so, you know, they're still trying to work it out. Mike Tolbert finally got some touches last week. And what he's also being used as is that second tight end, whereas Greg Olsen is assuming Jeremy Shockey's role, and you guys are familiar with Jeremy, obviously. What he's assuming Jeremy Shockey's role from last year as the primary tight end threat, who's kind of assuming that number two threat who Greg Olsen was in that split tight end formation, is Mike Tolbert.
Wow.
So he's getting a couple of passes, and once again, Can't stress enough, and we talked to offensive coordinator Rob Jasinski about this yesterday, about that downfield blocking and about how crucial it is. And so bringing in Tolbert, not only is he a bowling ball in the backfield, and not only can he help with that split tight end formation, but also downfield blocking.
Talking with Jonathan Jones of the Charlotte Observer, the Panthers beat writer. Jonathan, when you look at the Giants secondary, they're struggling in terms of giving up big plays. They have some injuries, a question still as to whether Prince Amukamara is going to make his season debut. How do you think the Panthers are going to attack the Giants defense, given some of the injuries to the secondary and the inconsistencies in Carolina's running game so far?
Obviously they're going to be a vertical threat, and they're going to try to look downfield. Kind of getting on the soapbox really quickly. A lot of people compare RG3 to Cam Newton, and how they're so different, and you're going to see how different they are on Thursday, is that RG3 throws out to the flats a lot. And against this Giants front seven, you're not going to want to do that. You want to attack the field vertically, and that's what Cam Newton can do. You got Steve Smith, who's a huge deep field threat. You have Brandon LaFell and Lewis Murphy. Those are the kind of guys that you want to get downfield. You don't want to get out in the flats. You don't want to keep it with those Giants defensive linemen. And I think that Carolina will absolutely try to expose the Giants secondary, especially with those injuries that you mentioned.
Yeah, as a passer, there's no doubt Cam Newton much further along than RG3, plus this 50 pounds of muscle and 3 inches and 4 inches in height that he has on him, too. But in terms of Cam Newton, obviously a very successful rookie season, 60% completion percentage, 21 touchdowns, 70 picks. You know he can run the ball, obviously, with his frame. Where have you seen him improve, Jonathan, as a passer from year one to year two? Do you see a more proficient quarterback as a thrower in his second year?
As a thrower, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, against Tampa Bay, he made those two crucial he threw two crucial interceptions in the third quarter against Tampa Bay, and then last week against the Saints, he threw another third quarter pass that should have been picked off, went right through the cornerback's hands, but that was another one. And so, you know, he's still kind of making those same mistakes passing wise in the times where the Panthers really just needed to step it up. He's still making those mistakes, and so I can't really say that as a passer he's improved, by leaps and bounds just yet. But as a runner, as a rusher, he absolutely is. He's understanding that zone read a lot more, and we certainly, as if he didn't get it last year. But he knows when to really, he sees the linebackers dive, and he's able to pull that ball out of D'Angelo or Jonathan Stewart's grasp and take it down the sideline. And obviously, we saw that last week with 70-plus rushing yards.
And given the short week, one of the guys that Cam Newton can lean on as to what to expect perhaps from the Giants' defense is Sean McDermott, the former Eagles coordinator, who is now running things on defense for the Carolina Panthers. How much is Ron Rivera, Jonathan, leaning on Sean McDermott to really help develop the game plan and the attack to throw the way of the Giants, given the limited time that they have to prepare?
Oh, I mean, he's leaning on him tremendously. And I mean, you hit it right on the head, is that he was with the Eagles. He knows this Giants defense. And when we asked him yesterday about how do you stop a guy like Hakeem Nicks, for example, he said, well, he's the Plaxico wide receiver. And that's kind of how he's thinking, is that he sees this offense and he knows kind of what they've done in the past several years. And so when he sees Hakeem Nicks and his route, what he really sees is Plaxico Burress and his route. And so it was really interesting to hear that. And so, you know, the Giants will obviously vary it up, and it's certainly not going to be the 2007 Giants out there on the field. But you're right. Ron Rivera will certainly be leaning on McDermott to help them try to minimize this Giants formidable offense.
I imagine, and we're joined by Jonathan Jones from the Charlotte Observer. I'm sure there's a lot of concern that there about the run defense for the Panthers. Doug Martin ran on them well in week one. Then obviously they had issues last week as well against the Saints. What's the feeling in terms of what needs to happen for that Panther run defense to improve and slow down a Giants team that seemed to get a little something going on the ground last week with Andre Brown in the second half?
Yeah, I mean, the Giants are certainly, they do seem to step it up. They have seemed to step it up. You know, it's a missed assignment here or there. It's not a wholesale issue with the entire defensive line, but it's always just one missed assignment. And obviously when it's the defense, if one guy breaks down, the entire defense breaks down. And so Luke Kuechly, who really impressed in the preseason, he was the 9th overall selection out of Boston College, he's kind of still flying around, and he's missing a few plays because he's so hype, he's so energetic, he wants to make every tackle. And sometimes he wants to make every tackle, and he's going so fast that he misses a few plays. And what we've seen so far is that he gets a little excited, and when, you know, they kind of do some misdirection, he gets caught up in that. So if he can kind of come along at that weak side linebacker and really kind of show the same kind of promise that he showed in the preseason, then I think that the Panthers will be able to kind of shore up that front seven and stop the Giants' run, or at least kind of halt it.
Jonathan Jones of the Charlotte Observer, the Panthers beat writer, joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff. He's John Schmelk. I'm Lance Meadow. When you look at the Panthers secondary, Jonathan, opposite Chris Gamble, they've now thrown in a rookie at the second corner slot in Josh Norman. How has he performed? Assess his play thus far, and how you think he'll match up with some of these deadly Giants receivers.
You know, Josh, he had a good first half. He did not have a very good second half against the Saints last week, but of course he's also going up against one of the best quarterbacks in the league in Drew Brees, and he'll be going up against one of the best quarterbacks in the league in Eli Manning in a couple of days. And so he's learning, and he's learning on the fly, but if the first half of last week was any indication, he is grasping it. But boy, talked to him yesterday about Victor Cruz and Hakeem Nicks, and you know, he admitted they're obviously great wide receivers, and you know, he's obviously not going to admit any nerves or being scared, and I'm not saying that he is either. But he does understand that there's going to be a difficult task, and he did just kind of assume that role from Captain Munnerlyn, who is now being used more in the nickelback position. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Captain and Josh Norman split a few reps at the cornerback position just to kind of take some of the heat off Josh, that rookie, against such an offense.
Now, when Sean McDermott was at the Eagles, and we're joined by Jonathan Jones from the Charlotte Observer, he rushed the passer a lot of blitzes, brought the safety a lot, and put his corners on a lot of man coverage with either one high safety deep or a lot of zero coverage back there. Is that what the Giants should expect to see from Carolina, or does he run a little bit more of a conservative outfit there, and you're going to see more two safeties deep?
See, I think it's going to be a little more conservative. What you're going to see is Hiroki Nakamura, the free safety, he plays way off the ball. I mean, he's 20, 30 yards deep because the Panthers want to take away that deep threat. At least he was last week against Drew Brees and the Saints, and I don't see why he wouldn't be against Eli Manning after he just passed for 510 yards a few days ago.
Right.
And so, but then you also have to remember what the linebackers are going through. You have Thomas Davis, who's coming off that third reconstructive knee surgery, and so you're not going to send him every single play. Then you also have John Beeson, who while he's played in almost every down, he's still coming off a hamstring injury after coming off a torn Achilles last year, and so you're not going to send him every play. But what you're getting from that front four is a really good push. Dwan Edwards, they just acquired from Buffalo, and he's already
tied for sixth in the league with 2.5 sacks. And so they really like that vertical push that they're getting from the inside. And obviously Greg Hardy and Charles Johnson, the two ends, are really starting to are coming along, and they're clicking. And so I do think that you're going to see a more conservative attack from this McDermott defense.
Jonathan, before we let you go, just want to get the sense of what the Panthers are thinking a little bit off the field as they enter this game. I mean, they're coming off a tremendous performance against the Saints, who are now 0-2. This division is somewhat opening up. This is a Thursday night primetime game. It's the defending champs. How much of a statement game is this for a young team like the Panthers?
It's huge. I mean, as you say, national primetime game. It's at home, which I think they really take a lot of pride in. But not only are they taking pride, but they also know that they have the advantage, not just home field advantage, but when you have a short week like this, at least you're not traveling.
Yeah.
And so that's the disadvantage with the Giants, be it a small one because it's a plane trip, but a short plane ride. However, they're not traveling. They get to stay at home. They get to stay comfortable after being supplanted 2 weeks ago by the Democratic National Convention. They get to stay home after a huge win. They favored it that night, and they were back late Sunday, early Monday morning to get back to it, and they don't have to travel. And so I think that obviously it's an advantage to be in prime time, to be in your hometown, but also especially this week, so travel is not a factor.
Jonathan, we appreciate the time, man. We'll see you on Thursday night down in Charlotte. Thanks a lot, Jonathan.
All right, fellas. Take it easy.
That's Jonathan Jones from the Charlotte Observer. Does a great job giving us some insight there on the Panthers as the Giants get ready to travel to Carolina tomorrow afternoon. They'll arrive late Wednesday, and then, of course, Thursday night's the game. We'll be arriving back around 4 a.m. on Friday night. And then a weekend off for the players. Then they'll be here on Friday. They'll talk to the media. It'll be like a Monday in the regular season. They'll be here a little bit later. And it'll be a good time, Lance. And, again, you really want to get a win, too, with such a long week after this Thursday game. You don't want the bad taste of a loss hanging around here for 3 or 4 days.
They know that feeling already. They lost to the Cowboys, and they had more than a week to let that linger. So they don't want to have to duplicate that emotion. And, you know, you mentioned, I know we had some callers earlier on the show about the challenges in preparing for a game when you only have a limited amount of days. You know, walk through yesterday. Today's really going to be their only true practice.
Correct.
Where perhaps they're going to really put the pads on, test one another out. But, you know, they've got to do somewhat of a balancing act because they want to rest up all the multiple injuries that they're dealing with, try to assess who may be ready, who won't. And then tomorrow they get on a plane. They get to interact with John Schmelk as well. They'll be looking forward to that. He'll get them all hyped up
on
the plane.
You mean avoid. Avoid John Schmelk would be what they actually try to do, Lance.
Well, don't be so modest. From what I hear... And others around the organization can back this
claim. Who are you talking to? You have some bad sources.
Let me tell you,
you have some bad sources.
I've heard that you've had quite an impact on this team.
Well, since I've arrived here, they have won 2 Super Bowls, so you can judge that
for
yourself.
There you go.
Lance.
See, I was alluding to that very fact.
Obviously, folks, that's tongue-in-cheek. I have nothing to do with anything, trust me. 201-939-4513. Mike in New Jersey. What's up, Mike?
Hi, how are you guys today?
Good morning.
Well, Mike.
I was wondering, what's your opinion on when do you think the Giants should put Andre Brown number 2 instead of David Wilson now? Because Brown seems to have more of a physical style to run and get more yards per carry than Wilson does.
Honestly, I think there's a place for both of them, but if you tell me today that Andre Brown's going to have more carries than David Wilson on Thursday night, this person covering the Giants is not going to be surprised.
Well, you silenced the caller. Look at
that.
Oh,
Melroy.
Melroy also helped with that, too.
Mike, sorry about that, man. Go ahead. You're still on.
Okay. I also had one other question. What is the cornerback situation for this Thursday's game? Is Prince possibly going to be back?
Yeah, you know what? I think he can be. He worked his way back in practice last week a couple times. He managed to have one really good practice, according to head coach Tom Coughlin. Struggled a couple of the other days, had some issues. So I think they're trying to take it slow with him still. But, again, he didn't play on Sunday, so he has some extra time to get ready for Thursday's game. I think they'll make every effort to get him in there just to improve the depth. And, you know, quite frankly, not that I'm pointing the finger at him and it's his fault, but Justin Tryon hasn't exactly looked great out there in the time he's had. So the Giants would like to get Prince out there. That can move Hosley back to the slot. Coe's another week off the hamstring. you got four good corners in there now. You can kind of rotate based on the situation, with Corey Webster being the fourth guy, obviously the veteran leader. I would say 60-40 Prince plays, Lance. What do you think?
I would agree with that assessment. The bottom line is it's all about pain threshold. What Tom Coughlin has mentioned, after he's practiced, sometimes he's had soreness and some lingering pain. Can he deal with that throughout the course of the game? And do the Giants feel, even if we could throw him out there for 40 to 45 snaps or even less, is it worth it?
Right.
Or do we want a guy to dress who can give us all four quarters?
Well, remember this too. Last year when Prince was coming off that broken foot, and obviously he's coming off the high ankle sprain now, they did work him back slowly. That first game back, he only played a few snaps here there. I believe it was against the Eagles. He played, I think, a dozen or so snaps. So,
and that was a rough game for him,
too. And you know what? And if you play him in those dime situations where you're only going to have 15 to 20 snaps, you have your top three guys be Webster, Coe, assuming his hamstring is good, which I think it should be. I don't think he re-aggravated anything. And, of course, the rookie Jerron Hosley, who's really been very solid as a cornerback so far this year. You missed the fourth corner. You're playing 15 to 20 plays. I think that's a good way to slowly work him back into the mix.
And you keep him fresh. You don't overdo it. They have the depth if Prince comes back. So I think that's an added benefit that the Giants are weighing in as well. You want to have multiple options. You want to be able to test these receivers throughout the course of the game. And remember, I think the secondary is going to play a big role in trying to contain the run as well. Because if these guys get past the edge and they're able to elude some tackles from the linebacker core, who are you going to rely on? You're going to rely on your corners and your safeties to step up and help that
and
cause.
D'Angelo Williams is a big play running back. He's had a ton of long runs over the course of his career. And you heard Jonathan Jones from the Charlotte Observer talk about how good the downfield blocking has been for the Carolina Panthers. And I honestly didn't know they were using Mike Tolbert in that H-back role. I think that's interesting.
He has that added versatility. Yeah. You know, he showed that with San Diego. I think now Carolina is just trying to adopt that game plan.
And people wondered why they brought Tolbert in when they already have two accomplished running backs like Williams and Stewart. I bet you they had this idea when they brought him in that they can use him as strength as a blocker. Even with those other two guys on the field, you can have all three guys on the field if you want. There's a bunch of different ways you can utilize them if you can play them. And almost that Bear Pasco H-back role where he's in the backfield, he's on the line, he moves around a little bit. Same type of deal.
Well, because the defense now needs to be prepared that Tolbert's not just out right there as a guy that's going to fill a hole. And it was interesting because when Carolina went out and signed Tolbert, the press release, I remember, said we are signing him as a fullback. And everybody was caught off guard. What do you mean? Tolbert ran the ball with the Chargers. Aren't you going to use him in some capacity as a running back? And, you know, they've clearly shown that they'll move him around. They'll mix and match him. But if you're a defense, you better be prepared for Mike Tolbert serving as a dual threat. And he's shown that through the first two games.
Our man Neli, freelancing a little bit here on Twitter, sends out a question to the fans. What's your favorite Eli Manning comeback victory?
Well, there's been a lot of them to choose
there
from.
There has been a lot to choose from. Most of the fans are like, well, how can you not pick Super Bowl 42? Well, how about Super Bowl 46? How about Bucks regular season week two? But honestly, in terms of impressive comebacks, how about the one against Dallas last year? Down 14.
That was a big turning point.
If you don't come back in that game and win, you're not in the playoffs. There's a big Philly game as well. Same deal. That Dallas game last week, coming back from 14 down the fourth quarter, I mean, you don't win that game, you're not in the playoffs. Arizona, big comeback win as well. So there's a lot of big Eli comeback wins. And you know what the funny thing about it? I'm thinking about it. Besides the two Super Bowl games against the Patriots, in the other playoff games, was there an Eli Manning comeback? They led the Bucs all the way. The Cowboys had a small lead in the first half of that game in 2007, so I wouldn't consider that a comeback. I wouldn't consider that a comeback victory. The Packer game was also back and forth. There wasn't a big comeback there. You jump ahead to last year. They led the Falcons from start to finish.
Packers,
they really dominated from start to finish. And the 49ers was really a back-and-forth deal. It was very close. So, really, in the playoffs, his only two comeback victories came against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Never thought about that.
If I would have to choose one game, I think I would go with that Cowboys game in the regular season in Dallas. The bottom line is they lose that game. You may not be talking playoffs right now. You may not be talking that Cinderella six-game run. That had the biggest impact when you look at the
Joe Martinez agrees with you here, Jersey Joe 18, just so you know.
I mean, what they did in limited time, I think that was probably the most impressive comeback.
And they've had other comebacks like that against Dallas, too. I'd have to go back and look at all the box scores and stuff like that. But they've done that against that bad Dallas secondary plenty of times where Eli makes big fourth quarter plays, third quarter plays, gets the comeback win. They have big ones against the Eagles over the course of time as well. Which Super Bowl comeback do you like better?
I'd say the first one.
Just because of the drama of the Tyree catch, even though there was a lot of good...
And the fact that the Patriots were unbeaten. I think you need All right. to take that into consideration as well.
So even in analyzing whether or not it's a better comeback victory, the fact they're undefeated still takes
Absolutely.
A measure there.
That has to be a huge factor. Right.
Well, here's why I'm going to argue Super Bowl 46.
Why am I not surprised?
I want to make this interesting. But of two, course. I think Eli in Super Bowl 46 was a better player and a better quarterback. In that final drive against the Patriots in 2007, he had a pass that should have been intercepted by Asante Samuel. The pass to Tyree, let's be honest, as miraculous as it was a prayer. It was a prayer. And Burris destroyed his man off the line of scrimmage on that great fade pass. Not a difficult pass. The Steve Smith play to get the first down, good play, okay? Again, not taking anything away from the comeback, but it wasn't this, you know, masterful performance of quarterbacking that's going to go down in Hall of Fame history.
There was some luck involved.
On the other hand, in Super Bowl 46, that pass to Manningham was one of the best throws you'll see. Squeeze it into that small area was better than any play that he made in Super Bowl 42. And when you think of just the precision and level of difficulty of an individual play, I think that Manningham play overcomes anything that happened in Super Bowl 42. And they did run the ball a little bit on that drive. I'm going to pull up that drive here, Lance. But
they did.
I think that's why I would go with Super Bowl 46, just because I think, in terms of being a quarterback, I think that was a stronger performance by Eli Manning.
Did you and Nile have a pre-show meeting that I wasn't aware of? Because that was a very well-thought-out explanation. I'm impressed.
No, I just came off the top of my head, Lance. Top of my head.
But it's hard to now counter that, because you're right. Eli Manning, you can certainly make the argument, is more developed in terms of his ability to orchestrate a drive than he was prior in that first Super Bowl run. But it's hard for me to overlook all of the storylines surrounding the Patriots coming into that game. And the fact that nobody gave the Giants a chance. New England was expected to control the tempo of that game from the start to the finish.
That's fair.
And the Giants all of a sudden made the plays, whether they're lucky or not, when they needed it.
Well, I'll agree with this. 2007 is the more impressive win. But I think 2011 is the better comeback.
Based on also their regular season performance, too. I'll give you that.
Correct.
Because nobody expected them to be in this position to begin with.
Correct.
They were
agree.
A winning team the 4 years prior. They were a 10-6 squad.
No, people weren't exactly picking them to win the Super Bowl that year either.
But they weren't 7-7 on the borderline of sitting on the couch
they
and watching
the
postseason.
They didn't play one home playoff game that year. They at least got one home playoff game last year against Atlanta. But you're right. Okay,
based
honestly,
on a down year they got.
Both
the home.
Very true, very true. Now, in that final drive in Super Bowl 46, he obviously the first – I forgot that was the first play of the drive. The 38-yard pass to Mario Manningham was obviously the big one. Then a 16-yard pass to Manningham, a 2-yard pass to Manningham, a 14-yard pass to Hakeem Nicks. Bradshaw ran for 7 up the middle. Short pass to Nicks. Then the Bradshaw fall-down run. So, Manning on that drive, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 for 5 in that drive. And I can go back to the 2007 one if you like, and I can kind of go through it. But it's funny, a couple years ago I went back and I watched that 2007 game over again. And just watching it, you sit there and you watch some of the throws Eli makes. And I sat there and I said, wow, it's amazing what a better quarterback he is now than he was then. He threw up some prayers off his back foot, fading away. There were some ill-advised throws in that final drive in that Super Bowl. Here we go. This is the final drive to win Super Bowl 42. All right? Eli Manning, short pass, Amani Toomer, 11 yards. Incomplete. Short pass to Toomer for 9. Scrambles for 5. Incomplete. The prayer pass to Tyree. Incomplete. The big first down pass on 3rd and 11 to Steve Smith. And then the touchdown to Burr. So that's why I'm going to go 46, because he had a much better and more proficient drive as a quarterback.
Yeah, it was a smoother drive the second time around, especially in terms of the efficiency of the passing. And but the bottom line is they're both impressive.
Did I convince you? Are you on? Did I make you switch sides, Lance?
Well, I agree with you that he's more developed at this point.
Okay, that's
I like
not the
that
question.
Argument, but I still—it's hard for me to overlook.
You can admit the strength of my argument made you change your mind. It's okay.
I don't want to give you that type of joke here on Big Blue Kickoff. Perhaps I'll give you that off the air.
Okay,
but let our listeners believe truly that I'm not going to let you smile so quickly here in the remaining moments of this show.
All right, we only have about a minute left here. You'll be with Anita Marks on Thursday and Friday morning.
That's
Anita,
right.
And Paul Dottino will be with you tomorrow morning before we get on the plane and fly off to Charlotte. So make sure you tune in to Big Blue Kickoff Live both those days from 9:30 to 10:30. And, of course, stay tuned to Giants.com the next couple days for all the preview you can ever want of the Giants and Carolina Panthers. You'll hear from Coach Coughlin and the players today after practice and in the locker room. Preview report will hit. I guess that'll probably go up on Thursday since it's a Thursday night game, right? I think that makes sense. So that'll go up Thursday morning for the Thursday night game. Dottino, myself, Anita, and Mike Eliason all combine our powers to create the 12-minute preview or so to give you all the insight you need on that Panther game.
And I'll be with you Thursday night
throughout
the course of the game, a half hour before kickoff. We will take your phone calls, preview the matchup, and a full post-game show following the game as well right here on Giants.com.
Lance will be up with you, so you'll be either happy at 1 o'clock in the morning, Lance will take your calls, or you'll be upset at 1 o'clock in the morning, and Lance will take your calls.
And then back here Friday morning to continue the theme.
You're right. Are you going to sleep under Nilay's desk here?
I think I'll choose a little bit more comfortable situation.
So parking lot.
Yes. That would be second option. Absolutely.
All right, Lance, great job, and we'll see you again on Thursday morning. All right.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
For Lance Meadow, I'm Josh Schmoke. We'll see you next time right here on Giants.com.